Blog Talk Radio.
Hello? Hello? David? Hello? Hello?
Dr. Craven, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I thought we got disconnected.
Well, I don't know what happened, and I apologize to the audience for the dead air. But let me once again try to introduce Dr. Craven. She is a certified traditional naturopath who teaches Kabbalah at Triangle Lodge, which is an affiliated body of the ancient mystical order of Rosicrucians in Texas. Dallas, that is. Her background includes 46 years of study in mysticism and arcane sciences. She believes that human beings are struggling to understand why the political, economic, educational, religious, and social systems, and that all life in general, seems to be in disarray. Her new book, Universal Mind Revealed, reveals how the powers of the universal mind were created and endowed to the human soul for its exaltation. The practical application contained in each chapter gives the readers tools to grasp concepts applicable to their day-to-day lives. And before I go on to introduce Dr. Craven, I just want to let the audience know that it's a special treat. She's prepared a special talk tonight about letting go of the old and embracing the new, vis-a-vis karma. And so she will be talking for the first half hour, and there will not be a dialogue during that time. And then we may talk, the two of us, based on what she's saying and any questions that's arisen for me. And likewise, I will invite the callers that are on the line to participate in the show. So, with that said, let me welcome Dr. Craven. And once again, how are you tonight, Dr. Craven?
I'm doing fantastic. And I want to thank you so much for inviting me to your show to talk to your audience about letting go of the old and embracing the new vis-a-vis karma. And so karma and reincarnation are two things that go together, and it's been my passion for 40-plus years since I've been studying mysticism. And so I will address this subject of letting go of the old and embracing the new by considering how the law of karma and reincarnation play an important role and how, by cooperating with these laws, we will bring to ourselves the highest achievement of which we are capable. We will also discuss how reincarnation and karma clarifies our physical relationship with others, and how, through thousands of years of rebirth, our personality is at last liberated from the wheel of necessity, that is, from having to incarnate and disincarnate over and over. Also, suggestions to follow during this new year and the years to come will be offered to help balance your life and advance you simultaneously along several lines of accomplishments. So, having said that, when we think about letting go of the old and embracing the new, we are thinking about progress. When we think about progress, we have to consider the law of reincarnation and karma. We have to think of life as either a series of accidental circumstances dominated by the principle of chance, or the law of consequence bestowing upon us that which is merited by previous action. There can be no compromise. The human mind must accept law or chaos, pattern or confusion as the rule of action. Effort has been made to blend the doctrine of vicarious atonement with the law of rebirth and karma, and ingenious explanations have been offered to prove that under certain conditions and for certain people, law is tempered by grace. This is only wishful thinking, man's old theological upbringing overshadowing his philosophical attainments. Occasionally, however, an explanation has been advanced to disregard the law of karma and to hold the hope that some angelic hierarchy could wash away the sins and errors of several hundred lives. In most cases, only the more gullible have been caught in the nets of deliberate falsehood. The law of karma has no exceptions. Man cannot deflect its course in any way. The law abides in space. It governs the motions of space. It forms and maintains the world. The law of karma is not regarded as something to be feared or escaped, but rather the true hope and security of the wise. As surely as the law punishes inadequacy, so surely it rewards adequacy. The man who lives by the law does not need to fear other men nor his own ultimate fate. The law both punishes and protects. It is the ever-present cause of progress. Some may say that saints, world teachers, and sages are the exceptions to the rule. But saints, sages, and world teachers are no exception to the law with power to change or modify its course. They are the product of such laws as evolution, reincarnation, and karma. The integrity of their thoughts and actions elevate them to the chief place among men and establish them as instructors of the rest. They are firmly supported by universal law, and they manifest the law in every thought, word, and action. We, the students of reincarnation and karma, must do the same. We must realize once and for all that there can be no exception of any kind or for any reason to the laws of evolution, reincarnation, and karma. Anyone who teaches an exception teaches a false doctrine. As the Buddhist monk says, there is no refuge but the law. Reincarnation and karma are the religious teachings of the New Age. They are individual in their application, but utterly universal in their scope. There is no need of a priestcraft with its concept of special privilege. Reincarnation and karma are merely mental and spiritual honesty applied to the process of living. Those who accept reincarnation and karma as rules by which to live should accept them utterly and without compromise. They should live in the law, recognizing the exactitude of the law as the one sure and inevitable fact which man is capable of knowing. In a universe of unknown mysteries, reincarnation and karma stand out as knowable and usable. The honest man approaches these laws with complete acceptance. He desires no escape from the consequences of his own actions. He expects no liberation apart from self-perfection. He may even acknowledge that he does not know what perfection is, but realizes that the law will ultimately bring to him the knowledge of all that is knowable, the highest achievement of which he is capable. It is proper and right that those who believe in reincarnation and karma should make it the absolute rule of personal conduct. They should perform only such actions as they are willing to accept as consequence. They should evade no consequences which they realize are the result of personal karma. Nothing else is necessary. We require no heaven or hell, no gods or demons. Life is the living out of cause and effect, each cause producing an effect commensurate with itself, each effect in turn setting new causes in motion. When the theory of evolution is added to this picture, we can recognize eternal growth toward reality. Every experience becomes a part of knowledge. We can live impersonally, comforted by the truth of eternal progress. The acceptance of the doctrines of reincarnation and karma carries certain moral responsibilities. What you believe, you must do. A philosophy of life is something to be lived, to be applied to all problems of living, to inspire the character and moderate the extremes of temperament. Reincarnation as a belief extends the horizons of existence to include numerous embodiments under a wide diversity of circumstances. The psychology of reincarnation is very different from the one life belief that dominates the Western world. In one life, so little can actually be accomplished, and so large a part of hopes and ideals can never be realized. The Western thinker is limited to the narrow score of years. In this hopelessly inadequate time, he must live, move, and have his being. In this cramped interval, he must prepare for an eternal hereafter. It is no wonder, then, that material theories, the products of scientific skepticism, are accepted as a welcome escape from the hopelessness of prevailing religious beliefs. Some skeptics criticize the belief in many lives. They maintain that it results in indolence and indifference in matter of the present existence, that it is a philosophy of procrastination and evasion, a wishful thinking for better days to come. This is not a fair criticism because the believer in reincarnation insists that his future existences depend upon his present integrity. Therefore, reincarnation is a stimulus to right action, but not necessarily a stimulus to acquisitiveness. It is inevitable that the belief in reincarnation and karma should result in the development of a method by which the working of these laws should be expedited. In the Eastern world, for example, there are numerous philosophical orders which teach the individual how to gain the most in experience and knowledge from the doctrine of compensation and the plurality of life. Where physical life is merely a passing incident in a larger pattern made up of numerous lives, the attitude toward living is different, less intense, less personal, less possessive, and more detached. There is also a higher idealism. Much more can be accomplished in several lives than in one. Therefore, the goal of living is further removed from the present than in a philosophy which teaches a single existence. The reincarnationist does not believe in haste, stress, or strain. It is the quality of accomplishment and not the rapidity of it that concerns such a mind. Whereas the Western mind is hurrying, ever hurrying, though it knows not where it goes, the Eastern mind proceeds slowly, exploring every detail of life. It has time to linger on its way, to sip a cup of tea by the hour, indifferent to the haste about them. There is time for gentle conversation, for the study of art, for the admiring of a fine painting, and for the innumerable small formalities. The temptation to achieve at the expense of others is gone. The haste to use up what little of life remains has no place among those who understand the law. Reincarnation is a belief that corrects not only the concept of incessant striving, but the illusional achievement toward which this striving is directed are shown in their true unreality. There is no desire to be great as men know greatness, no mad questing after possession or the power of possession. Instead, there is the remembrance of the Buddha's words, "Who lives a prince may come again in rags." That is, you may be rich in this incarnation, but on your next, you may be a beggar. Merit lies not in commanding and controlling other men, but in a kind and gentle victory over ourselves. The uselessness of position and possessions, which cannot survive the dissolution of the flesh, inclines the mind to temperate courses in a world of excesses and extremes. The true understanding of karma solves the whole mystery of egotism. It is not the illusional self that goes on after the dissolution of the fleshly part. Therefore, the whims, desires, and appetites of the personality are of little consequence. To the Eastern mind, conscious immortality is not a desire. They have no resistance to innumerable circumstances which normally would offend the ego. When the Westerner is reminded of his insignificance, he gets angry and resentful. But the Easterner, knowing truly how little he is not offended by criticism, but acknowledging all the faults of which he is suspected, realizes that only lives, many lives, can correct them all. Now, many people fear death, but the fear of death is a great delusion. As the time of physical dissolution approaches, both the living and the dying unite in common panic. Then comes a funeral, with weeping relatives sobbing over beloved remains. Then, empty years in which the memory of the one who has gone dominates all that concerns the daily existence of those who are left behind. This miserable picture is not possible when the doctrines of reincarnation and karma are actually believed. Death is not the end of anything except a personality that, in a certain sense, is never actually real, being merely a shadow casting matter by an immortal being who lives all the life of the personalities which he creates. Nothing could be more horrible than going on forever, always remembering, always desiring, and always repenting. Reincarnation and karma also clarify such matters as physical relationships, of father and son, of mother and daughter, of brother and sister, and of husband and wife. To the Buddhist, all associational relationships are temporary and illusional. There is no such thing as blood relationship. There are merely personalities living through the dream of relationships in order that certain experiences may be gained. Relationship is but the privilege of association for the purpose of growth and the opportunity to learn new lessons and to approach a little nearer the mystery of understanding. In substance, then, the belief in rebirth and compensation changes the entire viewpoint, enriches it, normalizes it, frees it for action, and removes forever the theological boogaboo of partition. The purpose of all evolution is to achieve liberation, that is, to produce a personality into which the soul flows so perfectly and completely that there ceases to be any interval between the two. To achieve this end requires the disciplining of the personality. This discipline is made possible only because previous lives have enriched the new personality with sufficient wisdom to desire this discipline. Until that time is reached, the personality is incapable of achieving liberation. Liberation must not be confused with the absolutism of modern metaphysics. True liberation is the withdrawal of the personality, the end of the illusion of I-ness, the consummation of hundreds of lives of gradual evolution toward reality. It is not the product of willpower, meditation, concentration, or any of these exercises which are advocated as substitutes for personal experience and action. Man cannot think himself, will himself, or hope himself into the state of true enlightenment. Liberation results from the elevation and refinement of personalities through thousands of years of rebirth, with the result that, at last, a personality is emanated which is capable of making the supreme adjustment in which it absolutely negates itself to the soul from which it emanates. This negation is not a psychical thing, nor is it a Christian humility, nor an inhibition, as in the case of the evangelized personality who is constantly recounting his sins. Liberation is a perfect and complete adjustment in which all of the parts of the personality are in perfect rapport with the soul itself. The result is adeptship and liberation from the wheel of personality rebirth. It is not necessary to attain the ultimate illumination such as that reached by Gautama Buddha in order to live well and happily through the years of the present personality. We could live better than we do. Each one of us could make a definite step forward, bringing with it added security and happiness if we would live according to the law. The acceptance of reincarnation and karma is the first conscious step on the long road that leads to reality. These laws are part of the esoteric teachings of every legitimate world religion, and the acceptance of them is essential to entry upon the path. After we commit ourselves to the doctrines of rebirth and karma, we must begin to live the gentle, impersonal life that must accompany this commitment. At this point, caution is prescribed. Having discovered a part of truth, but still partaking of considerable ignorance, the mind has a tendency to go off on tangents and to concoct innumerable erroneous beliefs relating to the subject. A common mistake is indifference to the misfortune of others. The attitude becomes one of, well, they have earned it, so let them suffer it. This is not healthy. No matter how wise we may become, or how stupid others may appear to be, it is the duty of the one that knows to assist the uninformed in any way possible. Another mistake is intolerance toward people of other beliefs and a sense of personal superiority. Such attitudes destroy the improvement that has been gained, and in the next life, this personality will probably be deprived of the knowledge of rebirth. Now, here are some suggestions to follow for these new years and the years to come. For people just coming into the belief of rebirth and karma, or slightly advanced in the doctrine, certain suggestions may be in order. In the first place, live normally and happily. Prove that knowledge has increased tolerance and understanding, and not limited them. Balance the temperament, advancing simultaneously along several lines of accomplishment, if possible. Do not become improvident, but realize that when the time comes for you to be free from physical responsibilities, your soul will free you. Do not attempt virtues beyond your understanding simply because others tell about them. Do not aim at immediate emancipation, or you will be sorely disappointed. Apply your belief to the circumstances affecting your life and make sure that they do work when they differ from your personal preferences. Teach them to others, but never force them upon a person who does not desire the knowledge of these laws. Do not permit impersonality to shield or harden your life, or permit yourself to become indifferent to social and environmental problems. Live what you believe, but make sure that you actually believe what you live. If you do, there will be no conflict, and in a few hundred more lives, you will achieve liberation, normally and beautifully. Regular morning and evening periods of relaxation and meditation can be added to your daily routine for the purpose of attuning your inner self to the cosmic or universal mind. Attunement of the inner self is mystically more important because inspiring thoughts and helpful ideas and impressions come to our inner consciousness from the universal mind at such times. By cultivating and encouraging the influences and ministrations of this inner consciousness, we add to its strength and thereby enlarge its opportunity to make its wisdom ours. As we daily add to the knowledge of our temporary helper, the brain, we likewise increase the knowledge in the storehouse of our inner consciousness, thus continually building up a dual reserve, the wisdom and knowledge of a temporary nature which is lodged in the brain, and that which is to be a permanent part of our evolving consciousness. It is the cosmic consciousness in us that we are encouraging to manifest, because through it we may experience our attunement and connection with the universal mind, the mind of God. Unless we establish a sort of triangular arrangement, we are never aware of what is going on. First, our outer consciousness or brain consciousness must become attuned with our inner spiritual consciousness in order that the inner spiritual consciousness may reveal to the brain or outer consciousness some of the things it has learned in the past, as well as that which it is learning day by day from its attunement with the cosmic mind. In this way, the spiritual part of us becomes a link between the outer mind and the cosmic mind or universal consciousness. such attunement may be accomplished by relaxation and concentration, which halt the unnecessary expenditure of energy and vitality in the physical body and brain, allowing this energy to be used by the spiritual or psychic part of the body for recreating new cells and revitalizing old ones, as well as permitting inspiring and helpful impressions to reach the inner consciousness. Relaxation and concentration for attunement may seem simple things, but you must judge them from their direct benefits. You must keep your mind and heart open to impressions and in every way allow the benefit of such attunement to help your physical body, your mind, and your daily problems. The benefit will be greater than you suspect. To summarize, I mentioned how letting go of the old and embracing the new is interrelated with the law of reincarnation and karma, and how, by working with these laws, we can achieve great heights, resulting in our eventual liberation from the wheel of necessity. Such matters as physical relationship with others was clarified when the doctrine of reincarnation and karma was applied. Also, suggestions to follow during this new year and the years to come were offered, basically to live normally and happily, proving that knowledge has increased tolerance and understanding, and to live what you believe, making sure that you actually believe what you live. Are there any questions?
Well, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. I truly am a believer in your last statement, and I was able to take in everything that you said. I'm wondering what one can do in terms of overcoming current life challenges if somebody lives by the golden rule and leads an upright life and makes amends for any damage they may have done in this present life, if that will help release them from karmic bonds.
Well, all karma has to be paid for. So one of the things that you just said is doing good. So you will have to double, triple, quadruple in your good doings in order to mitigate karma. Especially the kind of karma that a person may have created, for example, crime. If somebody kills somebody else, well, that's a big karma. They probably, in their next life or two life after, they may be murdered themselves. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you can experience what it feels like to be deprived of your physical body at that particular existence.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was thinking about the difference between Eastern and Western ideologies, and how so many people in the West become attached to outer circumstances, thinking that that's what will make them happy, and they turn to things that are toxic oftentimes, to drugs and alcohol and all kinds of compulsive behaviors to try to make themselves feel better, and it ultimately leaves them feeling empty and ashamed and leaves a wake of destruction in their path. So, I come from that background myself, and I've used 12-step programs for help, but I find that they're somewhat limiting because I believe that it's possible to totally overcome an addiction, and that one does not need to. Once an alcoholic, not always an alcoholic, for example. I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but I'm wondering about the process of making amends and how that shifts karma, because a lot of people that are involved in these kinds of things do create hardships for people that they love.
Correct. Yes, and I feel like if you have made amendments by the way you are living right now, that your soul will put you in the right place at the right time with the right people to bring more of that feeling to help you progress in your new determination. You still have to pay for some karma. For example, if a person has been drinking a lot, well, one of the karmas will be a body that, the liver, for example, will be inflamed, or they may suffer from cirrhosis of the liver. That will be karmatic consequences, having been drinking for many, many years. And so if your feelings are sincere, then what will happen is that, yes, though you are paying for having drunk for many years, I'm just using that as an example, I'm not saying you doing that. You may find a person in your path that can help you with your physical ailment only because you are sincere, you have good intent, you have repented. And it's all within yourself and the relationship that you have with your soul. The soul will help you, even though you may still be paying for karmatically for things that you've done in the past. The doors will be open so that you can continue mitigating karma. And I think that if you have an understanding of this, that, for example, let me put myself as an example.
Sure.
I am perfectly aware of the law of karma, and I try to live by it. Every minute of my life, I try to live by it. But, you know, I'm human, and sometimes, you know, I do things that I knew better not to do, but I do them. An example, my little granddaughter and I don't eat junk food. I don't. And but she wanted to get into this place, and she's 4 years old, and she needed to use the restroom, and while we went into this fast food place to take it to the bathroom, she decided she wanted to have something to eat, and she hasn't eaten, and she's hungry, so I thought, well, let me see what they will have over here that it will not be too bad. And so I thought, well, she likes French fries, and you know, that is pretty bad, but that was about the only thing that I could see in there that I could give her just a little bit of it. And so then I asked for 2 glasses. I was going to get water from their fountain, and I normally don't drink water from a fountain. I, you know, have my bottled water. But, you know, I was going to do that because I was going to sit with my granddaughter. And so they have the little button that you press for water, and then water will come. Except I pressed the wrong button, and lemonade was coming out. And then I realized that it was lemonade, and I stopped. Because, you know, I didn't pay for it. I want the water. I didn't pay for water. So, you know, I didn't have to pay for water. So I went ahead and then pressed the water button, and so water went on top of the lemonade, and it was like water with lemonade, and it was real weak, and so my granddaughter saw that. And I went ahead and served her the water because this time I knew where the button was, and water came out, and she noticed the difference in color. And she says, what are you drinking? And I said, well, lemonade with water. I want some. And so I have already tasted it, and I sort of liked it. But I went ahead and let her have it. And so I said, well, you know, I'm not going to hurt anything. I'm just going to go ahead and put a little bit of lemonade in this water over here and just taint the taste a little bit instead of just plain water. And as I went ahead and pressed the button, which I did, my elbow or part of my arm pressed the Coca-Cola button. And so Coca-Cola went in there, and also, not only did it go in there, but it went on my beautiful jacket that I had on because it was my elbow. I was pressing the button of the water. Water was going, of the lemonade. Lemonade was going in into the water, and then my elbow was pressing on the Coke, and it went on my jacket, my beautiful leather jacket. And I immediately knew it was karma. I knew that I had not paid for that lemonade, and here I was, pushing on that just to satisfy my taste, knowing fully well that I didn't pay for it. I knew it. And so how did I feel? I said, thank you, Father. You know, even these little things count. Yes, one more step forward. So that's what I did. It's like I thank Father for the lesson, never to be done again.
I think that's a beautiful example because many people will bemoan things in their past, not recognizing that they're simply lessons to be learned, and that every dark cloud has a silver lining, and that sometimes the greatest distresses in one's life are actually the biggest blessings, because they're opportunities to move into a new direction. And
you know what, too, David? I wanted to add that the offense of taking just a little bit of the lemonade to taste, to change the taste of the water, because it was a little offense, then I was able to clean the Coke from my jacket, which was leather, and there was not one stain on my jacket. It was just a warning. It was a warning to let me know what I have done. So I just go, thank you, Father. I learned.
Well, that's a great example of how we can learn a relatively small lesson and not repeat it. And what happens to people that keep coming up against the same kinds of behaviors over and over, and they never learn the lesson?
Oh, you're asking me that, and they never learn the lesson.
Yes.
They're not ready in this incarnation. They may go through this incarnation without knowing why. These are people that are blamers. They're accusers. They are people that are takers and, you know, self-pity. A lot of people are full of self-pity. Why me? Instead of saying, hey, you know, something is happening. There is a reason why it's happening. Let me find out. What am I doing to cause this? But, you know, it takes education. It takes being around other people of like minds that will help us elevate ourselves. But, you know, like the Easterner, they know that many lives will correct the problems. So if they cannot achieve that level of consciousness in this lifetime, well, you know, let's wait in the next life. You know, they will know. Because when we depart from this world, we can see exactly what we did wrong and how we can correct it. And so we come with a new attitude, being born of different parents to give us that opportunity so that we can now be able to think those things out and be able to do something about it. But, you know, progress is here. We are all moving forward. Some people are slower than others, but we are all getting there. We're all traveling toward our Lord. We're all going there, just a matter of time. More life.
I like what you said about not imposing your beliefs on other people. That seems to be a mark of humility that is necessary in order to allow each person the right to their own lives and their own life journeys. And what you were just talking about spoke to me of taking responsibility for one's life and one's actions. I believe that's very important. You know, we talked before the show a little bit about how we reincarnate day by day. Even in this life, we become changed people as we continue to evolve, hopefully evolve. One way or the other, something changes. Nothing stays the same.
Correct.
What kinds of suggestions would you have? This New Year's Eve tends to be a time for reflection, and then people make all these resolutions that they can't keep. What would be some of the best suggestions that you could make to people to stay present to the moment and to be patient with themselves and in order to make progress that's positive?
Yeah. But one of the things that I usually keep in mind is that, you know, I don't think of the new year as a new year. It's another day in my life. And to know that change is the true thing. It's like people say change and taxes are true things. You know, nothing else. Everything else is solutional. So
yes.
if I know that every change in my life is going to bring progress, because it does, even though it may appear not like people that get divorced, for example, they think that their life is ruined or whatever, it's not really like that. You know, even people say that war, you know, brings change and change is good. Well, I don't advocate that war is good, but we do know that war has brought changes, you know, many jobs, things like that. So it is that way in our daily activities. Our life is constantly changing. Our skin is constantly changing. We can see that a child grows to be an adult and an adult reaches maturity. So there's changes all the time, including in the physical. Our body change and sort of our circumstances. And we just, if we stay behind pondering as to, gosh, you know, I would want that, instead of looking at what's in front of you, then the person misses out. And again, it'll probably be another incarnation before now they can see. But if I keep myself focused on, you know, what's in front of me right now, and that to know that I'm right now making my future by my actions right now, then I ascertain that those actions are commensurate with my belief that because whatever I do is going to be, is going to put in motion other causes. So I have to make sure that what I do, I can live with it, that I can look myself in the mirror that evening, you see, and say, okay, I've done well today, you see. And I used to do that exercise a lot. I don't anymore. What I do is, if I feel within myself uncomfortable, I stop. Okay, what is it going within me that I don't feel right? Something doesn't feel right. And then just keep asking until it shows up. Because I think that what happens many times is that we go in denial about a particular circumstance. And we're trying to explain it or rationalize it instead of this is what it is. Let me take it by the horn and deal with it. And a lot of people are afraid of doing that because of fear of loss.
Yes.
And you should not fear loss. On the contrary, you're going to be gaining because it's going to free you to do other things that will bring you higher and higher in your evolution. That's how I feel, David. That's how I
feel. Well, it's like that old saying, the truth shall set you free. And, you know, perhaps that's what you're saying. In other words, let's go to the phones. We have Deanna here, and let's see what she has to say, if she has any comments or questions.
Sure.
Hello, hi. Deanna. Hi,
hi
there.
Doctor. Hi, David. I was disconnected when I went into the store. Sorry.
That's
but
all right.
I did hear most of the first 30 minutes. And I don't know if you discussed after that what you can do here and now to lessen whatever karma we've gathered up throughout the generations or the incarnations.
We actually discussed that.
She lost
the
connection.
We covered that.
Go ahead. No, I was just say that it might be good to review that one more time because some people need to hear things more than once.
I know that I have paid so much karma this lifetime, even though I did not do anything that I would be, you know, penalized for. And I'm hoping I have already paid up. But if, in the case I had not, what can I do?
Okay, a really good question. It's like I could go through our life being a good person, and then so many kind of crazy things happen to me. Where does it all come from? Well, it comes from previous life. You don't pay karma necessarily in one incarnation. You a person can create karma and go on for several lives depending on how bad the karmas are or how many karma the person accumulated. So you could go on and on in this lifetime, even though you've been a good person, it's a good thing that no more karma has been accumulated, to pay off, to bring yourself, how can I say, to catch up with the karma, you see? But that's what it is. Now, you are taking a real good attitude by saying, okay, how can I mitigate this? Well, the thing is to open up and just say, give thanks that the opportunity has been given to you to learn from whatever it is that is put in front of you. And so it may be that you don't feel good about it, but every circumstance has a lesson in it. And so it makes you better. It makes you stronger. It builds your character. And, for example, if something bad happened, well, you know, I really don't like that. That's not something that I want to do to others. Well, that's building character, you see? And so eventually...
I guess it's something like turn the other cheek.
Not necessarily. I don't like turning my other cheek. Because sometimes, see, we are given intelligence, wisdom. You know, that's inherent in us. To know the difference when we are being offended. You see? Many times, it could be karmatic. It's put in front of you to see if you can defend yourself, to see if you could take care of whatever circumstances. Somebody's offending you, you know, and or building their self-esteem at your expense, well, then, you know, you get up and take care of that. Not necessarily you're not going to hit that person, you're not going to do something drastic, but you're going to let them know that you are on to them and that you're not going to buy it. You know, take your garbage with you. It doesn't belong here. You see? You're taking care of yourself, and then the soul will try you again to see if you really, truly have overcome that. And then you do it again, and finally the soul gets it. She learns her lesson. Now let's move on. Let's do something else over here. See what she, you know, like that. Bring in different circumstances so that you can grow. And then you'll be in a position to teach others, because then other people will come to you. You know, these things are happening to me, and I don't know why it's happening to me. And then you go, well, you know, that happened to me too, and this is what I did, and this is what had gotten me. And I do feel a lot better about that. And so you start teaching.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to say thank you very much, you know, for what you just said to me. And thank you very much for being a teacher to all of us. And I wish you muy feliz año nuevo.
Oh,
thank
you so much.
Happy New Year.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Deanna. And I wish you a beautiful New Year day by day.
Thank you so much, David. And I will continue listening tonight and in the future.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your support. Thank you so much.
Good night for now.
Good night. Well, I think what you just mentioned is very important, and that is the goal of taking care of oneself. To me, it seems that we're meant to lead upright lives, and that we're deserving of happiness wherever we can find it, as long as we don't do anything to harm ourselves or others. What do you think about that?
Oh, I totally agree. There is a line of demarcation, however, you know, sometimes when a person is ignorant of these laws, for example, and they go about trying to reach happiness at the expense of somebody else, not knowing that they're really hurting somebody else. It does take the other person to jump in and say, hey, you know, you're stepping on my shoes, but if the other person doesn't know and they pout instead of telling them, then we have conflict. So we also have to be cognizant of that. You know, it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah. Well, it takes a lot of insight, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And again, it happens through thousands of lives, many, many lives that the person has been born and reborn again and again and again to be able to be at that level. It does take quite a bit of disciplining.
Now, what happens, I'm interested in your take on what happens in between lives. I've heard a lot of different things. What do you believe happens?
Well, through my studies, and also I do happen to know firsthand, because I do project into the other world, the higher worlds. I do project. It's a special techniques that I have learned through my studies, and so I put it to practice, and it has paid off. The thing is that we are living in a world of causes. The physical plane is a world of causes. We do here, and then we have the world of the effect. You see, sometimes we think that we are paying here, but we actually know we're actually creating. And so then we go into the world of the effect. And so depending of how bad we have created a karma, we go to particular places. For example, when we pass to transition, we have several bodies. We have the physical body, we have the astral body, the body of desires. Then we have the emotional body, which is, you know, where we feel emotions. And then we have the mental body, lower mental, higher mental. The higher mental in-house with the soul, the lower mental is that we use it for to do our daily activities, you know, to carry out, like you and I right now are in our
yes.
minds. Okay, so what happens is that these are bodies that we don't see. We only see the physical body. It is tangible. The other ones are not. This physical body is passive. It doesn't have a life on its own. It depends on the soul to enliven the physical body. So when the soul decides to divorce the physical body for XYZ reason, could be disease, or the person has no purpose in life. It's like if a person ambulates aimlessly without finding its purpose, the soul starts divorcing that body. That particular incarnation is like it's not accomplishing anything. So the physical body passes on, and now the astral body has to dissolve. That will be the next. And so it can take several years, depending on how materialistic the person was or that personality is. It can take many years before, they say 8 to 10 years, to dissolve. In the meantime, the mental body, lower mental, is still waiting, you see? And so in the astral world, that person is living the kind of life that they wanted to in the physical plane because it's a world of desires, you see? And so they are experiencing everything, whether it's good or bad, they are experiencing everything that is brought forth from those desires. Then the astral body dissolves, and then it goes into the lower mental. And that takes usually 2 to 3 years. And then you have that the soul has been liberated and is supposed to reside in what is called Devashan, in the land of the god. But some literature says that. But Kabbalistically, they go to what is called Da'as, D-A-A-T-H, Da'as, which is a place where all souls go if they have not liberated themselves from the will of necessity, waiting for the next incarnation, and it can take 700, 800 years. You know, sometimes it could take more before they come back. So the life in the physical plane is very temporary. You know, it's just a few years to learn, to grow. And then the worldly effects takes a lot longer. You see?
Well,
does that answer
you
your question, David?
Yes, it does. Very thoroughly. I appreciate that. I have a dog that's really acting up tonight, so it's a little bit distracting. But I'm wondering if you would have any closing words for us tonight on what we can do to keep our lives in an upright direction so that we don't create any more damage or damaging karma?
Well, I think that being honest with oneself, having integrity in our actions, try not to deceive other people, but, you know, even though it may cost us some money or giving of ourselves, it's better to comply with what is right than not doing it. Because sometimes, a perfect example would be like paying taxes. You know, some people try to avoid paying taxes, and of course, you know, nobody wants to pay taxes, and so create different, phony type of expenses that may have never happened in order to avoid paying taxes. Well, even that can cause karma, see, because what will happen is that throughout the years, you may find yourself lacking in money or losing money, you know, in many little ways or people taking from you. But that's what it is, you see. So it's like always having integrity to know that you are accountable to yourself. And if you truly, truly want to liberate your soul from living in this lifetime existence, physical existence, then, you know, it will take discipline on your part to really do it, and it will hurt because you want to go the other way many times because it's easier. You know, it's easier to keep your money. It's easier not to do. But you have to. You have to. And then it's going to come a point, David, that you live so much that you just don't want anything else. And it's going to be, you're going to be tested. You know, people are going to come around you and show you different things that, you know, you probably used to enjoy before. And then you finally say, well, you know, I've done that before and it didn't bring me any joy, no lasting joy. Temporary sense pleasure, but, you know, here I am, still wanting more of my life, and I'm still not happy. And this is when I act this way, and I feel like I have done right. I can look at myself in the mirror. I feel good. I sleep better. I think I'll keep this, you know. But it takes a constant doing it. You have to do it day in and day out. You see, you have to live it. You have to have it in your mind as to wanting to live with integrity. Very important.
Well, it says to me that to the one's own self, you must be true. And I think that's a great summation, and I thank you very much for joining me tonight.
Thank you, David, and for having me, and I want to thank the audience for also listening.
Wonderful. Well, God bless everyone. And so now, once again, we come to a close. We can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week. And remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.